Welcome back to another episode of the Brawn Body Health and Fitness Podcast. Joining me today is Wes Dunning. Wes is a strength coach over at Healthy Baller, and he is also serving a great role as a hooper, a mentor, and just has a great impact on the sport of basketball and really the next generation of athletes as a whole. Today, Wes and I are going to be discussing how to have a positive impact on athletes that you work with, whether that's in a strength and conditioning, a coaching, a PT setting, whatever it is that way, how to really humanize that approach and really have a positive impact on the people that you work with day in and day out. Really love how this episode came out. It's really just an hour and 17 minutes of straight great content and insight, and I'm really, really excited for you to hear this one. Before you get to it, though, be sure to check out ISOFIT, our sponsor for season 5. You can check out the description below for more on them. Enjoy. Wes, welcome to the podcast. I'm super excited to work with you today, man. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Dan. First and foremost, man, thank you for having me. You know, we reached out, and I remember you having Blair and Matt on here, two of the owners of Healthy Baller. I was honored to be able to follow in their footsteps and kind of join along in the conversation and meet up with you. So appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time too, Wes, and I'm super excited to dive into everything today. And, you know, you come very highly recommended, and I hear nothing but good things about you. But for people who maybe haven't heard of you before, or maybe they don't know all the amazing stuff you do, would you mind kind of walking them through who you are and all the stuff that you do on the day-to-day?
Well, it's a lot that comes with me. So first and foremost, you know, I'm a person, man. I'm a real dude. I'm a real person. I like to say, man, you're going to hear through the conversation, like, I've learned to be comfortable with who I am and speaking how I am. You know, I'm not the most sciencey kind of guy. I do love to be articulate when the time calls for it. But like I said, I'm a real person first and foremost. Secondly, you know, I'm a follower of God, follower of Christ and everything. So I think that lays a good foundation for who I am as a person, how I treat others. Then on top of that, you know, I'm a professional. So I'm a professional when it comes to the sports performance and strength and conditioning world. I'm a basketball skill development coach. And then also at the end of the day, man, I'm a hooper. Like, you know, we're going to get into it and talk about kind of my past as a hooper and how I came up kind of in a more organized sense. But for me, man, being a hooper, it's never left me. So that's kind of like the overall gist of everything that I think encompasses who I am. And we can get into some more of it as we continue the conversation.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, you work at a place called Healthy Baller. And I mean, to me, that just immediately makes me think of basketball, which is where Blair had his background in as well with the Wizards. And it sounds like you have a similar background as well. I think I heard that you played D1 ball at college and you played some pretty high level high school basketball before that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So kind of just backing things up a little bit, man, here at Healthy Baller, Blair and I work primarily with basketball players, as I would say, our primary demographic. You know, we have some volleyball, we have some soccer as well, but we have a big variety when it comes to our athletic participants. Definitely lacrosse. We have a big footprint in lacrosse in the area. But, you know, as Blair actually explained in the previous episode that he did with you, the Healthy Baller component does come from him in a basketball sense. But then just also everything that comes with it, you know, from the nutrition side, the mental side, and just being able to be healthy. As far as for me, yeah, man, I was fortunate enough, you know, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, more specifically Laurel, Maryland. So always representing PG County when I can. I was fortunate enough to go to Gonzaga College High School over in Washington, D.C. and play in the most competitive basketball league in the country, the WCAC. We had some really good success when I was there. I always like to brag about my senior year where we were fortunate enough to have a really good team, a lot of great chemistry, great coaching. Everything just came together and we were 34-1 in a consensus like top 3 to 5 team in the country, depending on what ranking system you looked at. Some of us had us ranked number one. We won every championship that we could have possibly won that year. Again, I was blessed and fortunate enough to go on to the college ranks. Eventually, I ended up at Hampton University. Again, had some good team success there early on. My first year of eligibility there, we were fortunate enough to win the MEAC conference tournament and then play in the NCAA tournament. So I got to experience March Madness, the big dance, and everything that just came along with that. And then from there, you know, there was a 40-minute span where we actually had to play the game and we played against Duke. I'm not going to talk about too many of the details with that, the score and all that. You know, that our run ended right there. They had a very talented team, man. They were coming off of the national championship that year. They had Kyrie Irving was there. A couple guys like Nolan Smith, the Plumlee brothers, Seth Curry was there. A lot of great players. And, of course, being able to play against a team coached by Coach Krzyzewski was just a huge honor. And then from there, you know, moving on. We had some up and down years as far as the team and then as far as my individual success. But it was definitely something that I grew from and learned from and got to play basketball at, you know, at the highest level. Even though it's considered, quote unquote, low major Division One. I think as I got into my adult years and started to work with athletes who were younger and who were aspiring to get to that level, I really realized like how special those times were, and really cherished, you know, what I was able to accomplish. So, like I said, man, big blessings to be able to experience that.
For sure. I love that, Wes. I mean, plain and simple, at the end of the day, the majority of athletes don't even play at any level of college. I think it's like 6 or 7% actually go on to play from high school to college. So to play at one of the highest levels, the highest level, I should say, of, you know, college basketball is amazing. And to play against the kind of guys that you played against on the regular, I mean, a lot of them are, you know, professionals now. So it's amazing as far as an opportunity goes for someone to be able to get to that level and stay there for a number of years in college. So that's incredible. And I'd imagine that's kind of impacted how you work with the next generation of high school athletes now and college athletes now for basketball, right? Like you're able to draw on that past experience and past competition and use that in how you kind of mentor and work with the next generation now.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you noticed, but kind of intentionally cut it off right there. So, and I alluded to it earlier when we were conversing, you know, I never played professional basketball as far as like an organized sense. I did play in like some tournaments and I think my professional earnings is $80. I remember I played in the 3-on-3 tournament a couple of years ago and the prize money was split amongst us and I got $80. So with that being said, that's why I say like, you know, I'm still a hooper. I don't know if, you know, if I would have played a professional career that lasted 8 to 10 years and my body would have been beat up and I would have been mentally fatigued to the point that I'm not as active as I am today. So I'm able to have a different level of, I would say, like athletic empathy is kind of what I call it when it comes to the athletes that I work with, I mentor, that I talk with, because one, I still put myself through the rigors. Sure, if you check out my social media, you see that I stay active. When I work out like I work out my athletes. You know, I'm my own coach. And subliminally in my mind, like, you know, I'm putting myself in these moments like, hey, I got to get ready to play this weekend in an open run. Or sometimes I talk enough trash with my kids that eventually I end up seeing them on the court and I got to be able to show up. So when it comes to, you know, training my body and training my mind currently, I use that to help with the athletes. Like, I know you're going to feel a little bit more sore in your hips. I know you're going to feel a little bit more sore in your knees. Hey, I know you just came off a plane. This is how you're going to have to adjust your workout for today, but you still got to show up. And then on the other sense of, like I said, the mentorship and just kind of giving them some guidance, dealing with the successes, dealing with the perceived failures along this journey is something that I don't take for granted. Not one bit, because I remember coming up, like I said, when I was at Gonzaga and, you know, we got a highly touted program. And I was a role player and there's a lot you just have to deal with that comes with all that. And then, you know, what it looks like to deal with some of the recruiting, some of the people that are in your ear about what you should be doing, where you should be going. Then the ones that are keeping it real with you. And it's like, hey, you're not doing enough in this sense. I know you think you deserve this, but you got to do this a little bit more, a little bit better. Then, of course, when you get into college, it's like, hey, this is what you say you wanted, but this is also what comes with it. So, again, I think I have a different kind of level of athletic empathy when it comes to being able to relate. When it comes to being able to relate to the athletes I work with, especially basketball players. But, you know, I'm able to relate with them in a lot of different ways because of my past experiences.
I love that, Wes. I completely agree. I mean, first off, there's something to be said about someone who walks the walk and talks the talk and not just does it, right? Like, you're able to relate to the next generation of basketball players because you are a baller yourself. You still play basketball. You come from that background. And I think that's something that gains a lot of respect and trust and appreciation from the people you work with on the day to day, right? Like, you know that, like, some things, like, hey, maybe a little bit of knee pain after a lot of time on the court is pretty common because you've probably been there yourself. You know that, hey, maybe a little bit of this exercise or that exercise helps it feel better because you've probably been there yourself. So I think there's a ton of value in experiencing those things yourself and then being able to, you know, back that with the college education and the degrees and certifications that you have, kind of combining the experience with the book knowledge side of things. And on top of that too, you kind of mentioned a few times on the mentorship side and a little bit about all the other, I'll call it like noise that exists in the athletic world. And, you know, even when you started out, you said, you know, I'm a person, I'm a human. And we kind of forget that with a lot of the athletes we work with is they're people too. And, you know, we kind of get talking about a lot of these different athletic things and we lose that human element or human connection with them, right? Like, you mentioned about all the noise. We talk about college offers and scholarships and what this one wants and what that one wants. You hear from your coach, you hear from scouts, you hear from college coaches. Everyone gives you feedback and it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to mentally process. And, you know, you can't actually follow all of the advice given to you because there's some contradictions in there. So at the end of the day, you have to be able to like sort through the noise and find a way to kind of like embrace the silence and stillness that life gives you sometimes to be able to actually like process what journey you're on and what best aligns with where you're going yourself, I think.
No, absolutely, man. It's a yin and yang to all of it. Like you said, the noise, the quiet, just like with the symbolism of the yin and yang, I mean, it flows, it's on each side, but then also like it's a little bit of silence that you got to try to embrace and try to capture amongst the noise. During the noise, you got to try to find some of that silence. Amongst the noise, you got to be able to decipher what's the good noise that I should be listening to. During the silence, you got to try to decipher like, all right, what is it that I need to be prepared to hear? Be ready to, you know, be actionable on. So I definitely think you hit the nail on the head with a lot of that. Even just kind of speaking to the point of one of the things that I'm big on, just humanizing everybody, not just athletes. In my mind, honestly, everybody's an athlete to some extent, to kind of take from that old Nike quote, but just that like kind of connection piece. And I think that's what I, along with a lot of the staff, you know, here at Healthy Ball, we really seek to do is have that connection with people and like humanize everybody. Kind of like a inner mantra that I have and I express to some people is, you know, growing up and going to college, you know, you always looked at, you know, they always say you're a student athlete. And, you know, they would always try to emphasize to us like, hey, you're a student first because, you know, you got to get your grades to be eligible. But even more what I've been learning in this adult life and seeing from these kids that I work with, you know, I learn from them just like they learn from me, is like, you got to humanize the student athlete. Like it's human student athlete first and foremost, because just like the sports is pressure, it also can be a relief too. So is the grades. Like we work with a lot of highly successful kids in this area, like I said, in academics and athletics. So they might miss a workout or come to a workout before afterwards, and then they have SAT prep, they have ACT prep, they have Spanish tutoring, they have music. There's just, again, people that want to be successful in a lot of areas, but then I try to connect on like, all right, what about you as a person? Like, you know, how did you sleep last night? Like, how is your dynamic with your friends going? Like, you know, I can't tell you, you know, how many conversations that I've had and how I've been able to relate and get better out of a person, you know, during the workout. And then, you know, I think even like some aspects of life, just through some of these conversations, because whether it's, again, sports or whatever else they got going on academically, it's only a part of who they are. You know, there's a whole lot more to them. And, you know, again, kind of just bring it back to like the exercise standpoint of it all. I think like, you know, when it comes to some of my workout philosophy, you know, we try to create better movers, have a stronger foundation. And then from there, you can build whatever else you want on top of it. You know what I mean? Like if you're trying to be a faster sprinter, if you're trying to jump higher, if you're doing that from a poor foundation, sure, you might be able to jump higher, but you also might lead yourself to be a little more susceptible to injury per se. But again, if we can strengthen that foundation from an exercise standpoint, then I think you have a better chance of building anything on top of it. Circling back to life, if you can be a better human, you know, have that connection on a human level, I can get you to push a little bit harder in the weight room. I can get you to do a little bit extra on the conditioning. Shoot, some kids I've been able to reach and get them to eat a little more vegetables. Parents reach out to me, Wes, I don't know what it is that my kid, he didn't like the green beans, but he got to try it. And that took some time getting to know the kid and maybe like circling back. And then eventually, hey, he trusts me as a person. I'm going to at least give it a try. And then eventually through that trial and error, we find sticks and we can get a lot more from that.
I love that, Wes. I love that. I mean, just to kind of run it back there, a lot of the different variables and factors that you mentioned impact what a lot of kids come and see you for in the first place, right? If someone's coming to you, they're probably looking to get faster, get stronger, you know, be better on the court or whatever it is that way. But if you don't have a lot of those other factors in check, you really can't do that. Like, you know, you think you can sit there and develop skills with someone, but they're only sleeping 2 hours a night. Like, it's a lot harder from a motor learning and mental standpoint to develop motor skills when you literally are not sleeping. Like if there's some of those other stress factors that you mentioned earlier, you know, maybe it's social, maybe it's economic, maybe it's, you know, any one of a variety of different factors. And you see a lot of crazy things working with people. There's been situations that have come up that, you know, I kind of hear the story and like I never would have thought that the situation that happened would have happened. So all of those things play into the physical element of what we're trying to improve and get better at. And I think that's something that's often lost in that conversation of, you know, exercise, strength and conditioning and, you know, coaching skill development is that human side of things, like you were saying, is all those other factors that we don't think about or that we don't take time to ask about sometimes. All those other things that most people miss are sometimes the big rocks in the jar of life that can really, you know, determine your success for what you're doing. You know, to the point that you made on nutrition, if your athlete's not getting the nutrition they need and they're not, you know, well fueled and fed for the sessions, they're probably not going to have the same amount of energy. And long term, they're probably not going to see the same results if they're not taking in the, you know, correct macro and micronutrients to recover from what you're doing. So I think, as you mentioned, all of those things get overlooked and it really plays a vital role in developing, you know, skill or strength and conditioning or whatever type of thing we're trying to work with the athlete on, I think.
Nah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree.
On that strength and conditioning versus skill side, Wes, I know that's an area that you are really an expert in from what I've seen. I mean, you walk the walk and talk the talk on the basketball skill side from playing high level yourself and still playing basketball right now. And you also work from a strength and conditioning standpoint with Healthy Baller. And this is an area where I see a lot of debate. You know, I hear some coaches that really don't like the strength and conditioning model, and they feel like their athletes would be best served by just spending more time on skill development for sport. And likewise, I hear some strength coaches who really push heavy for, you know, less time on skills and more just general movements and strength and conditioning and that sort of thing. And, you know, I think everything exists on like a spectrum or a continuum. And on one end, we have, you know, all in on skill development and no strength and conditioning. And then the other is just all in on strength and conditioning and like completely absent, like, you know, sports skill development. And I think at least most of the time when I have these conversations, I think the best answer tends to lie somewhere in the middle. You know, as far as your take on that, where do you feel the best balance is for a lot of these high school and college athletes on the, you know, skill development versus strength and conditioning side?
Well, I definitely think it's a multifaceted and a multi-layer kind of answer. To kind of start, I would say that one, balance looks different for everybody. You know, if you're a very skilled player and let's say you're always getting hurt or you're out of shape, then maybe you need to spend a little more time working on your body, working on your nutrition or whatever it is. And then in the opposite vein, if you're super athletic, but your touch isn't where it needs to be, your handles aren't where it need to be, maybe you need to have your balance looking a little bit different. So balance could look like 50-50 for some people. It might look like 20-80 for somebody. Like, but it's still the balance that it is for that person. So As with a lot of things in the sports performance and even skill development world, I think the best answer is it depends. Like I said, we're dealing with humans here. We're dealing with people here. We're dealing with athletes here that have different needs. So I would be remiss if I didn't say that, or if I were to say that each person, the balance looked the same for each person. To that point, I also think that it's important to recognize, you know, we talk about connection. I think that's why there's some disparity or disconnection, honestly, between both sides. Like strength and conditioning coaches, I don't know if they fully entrench themselves enough into the sports or what skill development looks like. On the opposite side of the coin, I don't know how many skill development coaches truly look into, you know, what strength and conditioning should look like. And then also, on the third side of this hypothetical coin, maybe like on the edges, is that maybe you have been exposed to some poor experiences with each. That's why, again, I'm honored and fortunate enough to, I think, be able to insert myself into each side. Just going back into my history, when I came out of college, like I said, I never was fortunate enough to play professionally from an organized standpoint. I got right into doing some basketball training for a couple of years before coaching at Gonzaga High School in D.C. and then coaching at AAU. So that was probably from around 2013 up until about, I think, 2019 is when I stopped. So I got about 6 years of like real basketball skill development training under my belt. In that timeline, a little further down the line, I would say around 2014 or so, I was doing some physical therapy, just like tech aid type stuff. Kind of got that itch to learn about our strength and conditioning or just exercise, what it's supposed to look like. And that's why I got put on with Coach Blair and coming on over here. So then from 2015 up until this point, I've been doing strength and conditioning. So, and this is a high level facility. I'm around a lot of high level minds. My exposure to the strength and conditioning world and being able to get into this kind of world with my basketball sense, I've been doing basketball since I was 4 years old, been doing the training for, you know, 10 plus years at this point. I got a great balance on both sides. So I know the way I do it. I have a lot of trust from people in the sports performance world. I got a lot of trust from people in the basketball skill development world, from high school coaches to AAU coaches to agents to parents and stuff. So they have a connection with me. Even I recognize that, you know, through my experiences, when I'm having initial conversations with people who don't know me, never seen the Healthy Baller facility, never really been exposed to the training, they're a little reluctant to, I don't want to train in season. I don't want my kid to just get bulky like a football player. And I had to kind of learn to step back and, you know that they're not taking a shot at my training. They're taking a shot, per se, at what they've seen, what they perceive, what somebody else may have been exposed to. But then they learn, hey, when we're here working with Wes, we can work out during this high school season because he's actually going to shift his sessions. They're not going to look the same as when they were in the summertime. I can have my kid lift with Wes on a game day because it's going to stay in line with the philosophy of development doesn't stop, but for that day, it's going to look a little bit different, and he's still going to be primed and ready to play in the game. On the other end of it, from the skill development side, I do think, you know, some of the problems maybe that I've seen is that there are some components of sports performance that are involved on the court side. For instance, if a coach has a kid doing whatever dribbles, drive to the baskets, bro, those are, you're doing max effort jumps. A lot of times when you're cutting, you got to stop and go to a jump shot or whatever. That's some senses of agility. You're cutting. There's impacts to the joints that are happening that I don't think that some coaches are aware of. So it can kind of lead to some soreness. And, you know, if a kid's ankle hurts, knees bothering them, then they might say, okay, well, you need to stop doing all that lifting you're doing over there. But it's like, hey, basketball coach, you know, you're doing some things that's leading to this impact as well, too. Again, on my side of it, you know, I'm fortunate enough. I keep using that word, but I really feel fortunate enough to have the knowledge and experience on both sides that I know that, friends, I had a guy early on the court today. Did he work out in here? What's today? He worked out with Blair because he's doing his sports performance stuff with Blair in here. And he was also on the court yesterday. And he also played yesterday, but he still wanted to get on the court with me today. So we had a conversation, knowing that yesterday was so intense. We made our side today on the court way less intense. A lot of shooting, a lot more like technical focus versus when I had him on Monday. It was a lot more intense. You know, I'm hitting him with the pad. He's got to get to 2 feet. He's got to try to jump up, touch the glass, and things of that nature. So, again, circling it all back, I think if more coaches on either end got exposed, one, to high-quality services on the other side, and then also got to kind of know and got to see and maybe do some research, get their knowledge up on the other side, then there would be a little more acceptance, or maybe a lot more acceptance, to having their athletes be exposed to the other side without so much contention. Because I think that's one of the things too, man, with anything, with life, with the sport, with these industries, like, we got to use each other's services to not be as like constrained, but more for the greater good for each other. Because when it's done well, and I've seen it done well from my own experience, whether I got a kid for the sports performance side and they're working with another skilled trainer, that I show up to a session, I talk to them, and they'll tell me, hey, this kid, you know, been dealing with, and he said, okay, cool. Well, we've been doing some of these TKEs. We've been doing some of these things to prep the hip, some of this glute activation in our sessions, and it gets them going well. So now their skills coach knows, like, hey, such and such, did you do your hip work beforehand? Your knees bothering a little bit. I brought some of these bands. Let's do X, Y, and Z. So now they know that when they come into me in the morning, they go to them in the afternoon, we all had that conversation, that dialogue, and all of a sudden, it's okay. And again, it's for the greater good of that athlete.
You touched on so many amazing points there, Wes, and I'm going to do my best to recap all of them. You know,
I got a little long-winded, man. You know, I'm passionate about this stuff, so dude, I appreciate you.
Dude, we'll test my memory here. you know, to kind of work backwards and mix a few other things in as we go. I mean, first off, your point on for the greater good, you know, it's amazing to me how often we forget that we all should be working together for, you know, the common goal of improving the athlete and the person in front of us. And some people have, you know, discussions or disagreements on how to best do that. And that's okay. I think that's healthy. I think that's how we all learn and get better as professionals. But we all have to agree upon and admit, like, the most important thing is the person or human that we're working with in front of us, not just winning this tournament this weekend so we can get a new trophy for, you know, the travel team, like, showcase or whatever that way. Like, it's all about the people we work with and the people we serve on a day-to-day, not so much like, you know, the little things along the way. So if we can all find ways to work together and come together as coaches, as strength and conditioning specialists, as PTs, ATs, chiropractors, sports med docs, whoever, if everyone comes together and works together collaboratively for the common goal of working on improving the person in front of us and providing them the best possible experience to become the best version of themselves, then I think at the end of the day, our job is done. How we do that, as you mentioned, you know, it's almost seasonal in a way. Sometimes we have to shift towards more of a skill focus, and sometimes we have to shift towards more of a physical preparation and strength and conditioning focus, right? Like, it's a pendulum that swings back and forth. It's not always going to be, you know, a strict answer of this is the way, this is the only way. And as you mentioned too, it varies based on the athlete you're working with. There's some athletes that come in that are just very physically gifted and just very, very strong brute force wise, right? Like, I was never one of those people. I was around when I played football my senior year of high school. Like, there was kids in there that I've never lifted before that could walk in and deadlift 365, 405, you know, like nothing. And I was over there like lifting for years, still not at that point. So some people are just, you know, gifted in different ways than other people are. And that's okay. But we have to individualize and modify for those individual differences. Or, you know, we touched earlier on some of those different circumstances, or you even mentioned and gave the example of, you know, you knew that one of your athletes had high intense day on the court, high intense day from a strength and conditioning standpoint and wanted to get more work in the next day, and you just kind of lowered the intensity a little bit, you know, kind of making like a little bit of like a cyclical flow of how we do things from like high intensity day to low intensity day. I think that's a really great and really healthy way to go about things. So instead of just absolutely smoking your athlete every day, actually taking into account all the other things that take place during their day outside of the hour you have with them, and then modifying your session accordingly. You know, you can have the perfect session planned, whether that's from a strength and conditioning or a skills development standpoint. And if it doesn't fit how that athlete presents when they walk in your doors that day, then it might very quickly go from the perfect plan to a very flawed plan that might actually add insult to injury. So being able to adjust and adapt on the fly is absolutely essential. And it sounds like that's something that you do regularly and routinely. And I think that's what makes coaches better, is their ability to adjust on the fly to how the athlete presents that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of expound on some of the points. Adaptability is huge. Even when it comes to, you know, the dynamics of getting along with coaches on either end, like we talked about, you know, the sports performance side and the skill development side. I think adaptability is a huge trait, you know, as sports performance coaches. I think coaches in general, you know, we all want adaptable athletes, but us as coaches got to be willing to adapt too, whether it's our daily plan, whether it's our weekly plan, and it might be based off of what the kid did outside of your session. And say whether it's the stresses of life or the stresses of another session. And again, it's also not going to be based off everything that you agree with. I think that also comes into it as well. Just, you know, what I was saying earlier, I think something that's big, you know, I talk about the connections. So I think you got to be willing to learn from other coaches on either side. Because not even like necessarily like learn to implement because you're going to change what you're doing, but you got to learn so you can know what else is going on, what else is out there. And then maybe you can adjust some of your philosophies, evolve some of your philosophies, and improve your own philosophies or whatever you're doing. Like, as much as, you know, I'm talking about and I think I'm saying a lot of the right things, I've gotten it wrong numerous times. And even on the times where I wasn't wrong per se, I could have been a little more right. I'm forever adapting, forever evolving. You know, we have the great PT staff over here who does a lot of great things. I got some great minds and mentors around me on the sports performance side that I have great access to. And I can see some things that they're doing. And I got to figure out, man, all right, why are you doing that? What are you doing in this situation? Okay. But I'm not going to like just next session, hey, I saw Matt doing this. We're going to do this. Like, how can I try it out? And hey, yo, I saw Blair doing this. Hey, you know, I've been doing some research on this for the last month or so. We're going to start ingraining some animal flow. You know, I went over to Senegal and learned from the NBA Academy Africa, from their great staff over there, a lot of great stuff. But if I would have just come in and overhauled everything I was doing, you got to kind of like slowly implement. So then also with saying all that, on the other end of it, be willing to kind of take some of that criticism. You know, we got our PT staff over here, and I think they do a phenomenal job of getting the athletes back ready to play. I remember I had an athlete, a basketball player this past summer. He had a bad knee injury, and he had made a lot of steps to getting himself to becoming a highly touted player in the area and in the country. And, you know, it was a contact injury where he got hit pretty hard and he was frustrated, obviously, with all that. But he came in here, was working with Dr. Wesley, who's, you know, considered an expert in the knee rehab kind of world. And Doc did a great job of getting him back. He got back to me, and we got the rolling. And I remember I was with him in some open gyms, and there were some college coaches there, and they were checking him out. And the coach, you know, he came and talked to me because the young man introduced me. And he was like, man, we were expecting him to be a shell of himself. Like, he looks better than what he was when we saw him before in July. And I think that's because they've done such a good job of the way they go about their physical therapy. So again, circling back just to say all that, what I was trying to say, we had discussions where like, I might be like, hey Doc, you got it. Like the angle, the way he's cutting, that's not going to happen in the game. Like he's going to be exposed to X, Y, and Z. I know it's not the most structurally sound or whatever you see in the textbook, but like, this is what he needs to be able to do. You know, maybe add this X, Y, and Z. Same with on our end. We could be doing a session and he'll come over, and that maybe obviously not in the session. You know, we learn how we have that connection that we can have cordial and respectful conversation, knowing that it's for the greater good. And he'll tell me like, hey, some research has said X, Y, and Z, that that's probably not the best for this at this time. And I can't just be like, well, this is how I've been doing it. Nope. He's not going to go, listen, everybody's been telling me this, or I've been reading this. How much research do you have? Like, we had that discussion. So I think, and again, that's where it goes back to adapting and taking from others' experiences, learning from each other, that I think was going to take this industry, you know, way further if people would just kind of, I'll say let the guards down, but definitely like humble themselves and keep it humble and learn from one another and adapt how they need to.
I completely agree. I forget the quote right off the top of my head, but it goes something about how, you know, if you're doing the things the same way today as you did 10, 15 years ago, then that says you haven't learned anything and you haven't made any progress over that time. So, you know, certainly having those difficult conversations and forcing yourself to, you know, kind of get in those spots where you learn more, but you kind of question like, you know, hey, has the way I've been doing things for the past, you know, few months or year or however long it's been, has that been the best way to do things? And if the answer is no, then it's a simple, what can I do to improve what I'm doing? And I think that's what we all need to be after. As you said, how can we improve the methodology of what we're doing and how we're working with people, how we're, you know, implementing exercises and implementing all these different things we use, is how can we get better at doing it? And if we're all working together to commonly improve our own skills, our own line of thinking and that sort of thing, then at the end of the day, you're not doing anything wrong and you're just serving the person in front of you better and better and better, which I think is really important. I also,
not to cut you off, that actually just made me think of a great mindset, bit of a gem of a mindset that I adapted through some failure. So, you know, I got my CSCS, but I remember the first time I took the test, I remember I studied. I'm not a big school guy. I love to learn, but school was not my favorite thing. You know, I got good grades and everything like that, but I remember preparing for the CSCS, I really locked in. And I remember I created a whole regimen and structure. And I studied my tail off. And I remember going into the test and I was just like, man, this is probably the most prepared that I've ever, preparation I've ever done for something scholastically. And I failed. I failed by 2 points, right? And I remember how beat up and battered I was and how rough it was. And eventually I had to get it back up on the horse. Because this is something that I realized in my heart of hearts that I wanted to do. Like, I could have gone and just got another certification, but this meant something to me. So I remember getting back into it, preparing, and I felt even more prepared. And I remember the second time I took the test, like, I blew it out the water. Like, I crushed it. I passed. And I remember what the philosophy was for me that I got from that. I was like, man, even though I did my best, like, one, it wasn't good enough, and I can either beat myself up and say, hey, that's the best I got. Or I can realize that my best can get better. Again, when kids, you know, they're working hard in here. It's the best they ever felt. They might go out to an AU tournament, and it's like, dang, I'm still not where I thought I would be compared to others. I've been doing all this work. Well, you have gotten better. But realize that just because you, quote unquote, failed at that moment doesn't mean you're a failure or that's the best you can do. That's the best you've done up to that point. But my main point is, like, even if you do your best, you got to know that your best can get even better regardless.
Yeah, I completely agree. And going back to our point earlier about, you know, stillness and silence, right? Like, take those moments that you can, you know, break away and just, you know, be still and silent and not, you know, constantly go, 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 and use that time to, like, reflect on what you're doing and how it's working. Because that's where you're able to move the needle forward, right? Like, you know, in your case, it sounds like with the CSCS, you know, it didn't go the way you wanted it to the first time. You kind of stepped back, assessed everything, and then kind of re-engaged from there. And sometimes that's what we have to do. We have to step back and reassess our situation, and then go back at it from there. So I think that's a phenomenal point to hit on, especially in this, you know, skills and strength and conditioning type of world where we're all trying to improve what we do, because I don't think any one person has all the answers. I don't think any one person has it all figured out yet. You know, what works well for one person and one person's system and methodology might not work for every single person. So finding ways to constantly improve is essential. And you mentioned a point a little bit ago that I want to go back to, is the point of, you know, all those contacts that athletes get in practice, right? You know, when they're doing, you know, jump shots or cuts and that sort of thing, as you mentioned, it's all repeated, like acceleration, deceleration, plyometric contacts. And that's something that a lot of us don't take into account. We talked about this recently on, you know, a podcast with Logan from the Rangers there, where, you know, he kind of said that's how he structures the conditioning, is like he looks at what they did in a sport specific element that day, and then changes their volumes and intensities and so on that way based on their contacts. And I think that's a great point. It's like, it's so easy to overcook and overdo it for a lot of these athletes. And then they end up, you know, seeing people like us and PT for their, you know, injuries that could have been prevented had those conversations just been had a little bit earlier on, you know, practice plans and skill development plans, and then adjusting strength and conditioning plans accordingly. Is, you know, we don't need to have athletes go on the court and do 2 to 3 hours of skill work and then go do 2 hours of conditioning and then go do strength and conditioning sessions on top of that. Like, there is a point of diminishing returns there. I kind of look at skill and strength kind of like, for lack of a better way to put it, kind of like the pharmaceutical industry looks at medication, right? There's a minimum effective dose, meaning we give someone this and we get the result we want. And there's a maximum effective dose where if we go over this certain amount, bad things start to happen. And we want to stay kind of in between that minimum and maximum effective range, or get as close to the maximum as we can without going over it at certain times. And I think a lot of times it's so easy to go over the max amount just because we don't recognize all those different contacts and how that plays into the athlete and the stresses on the system, on top of all those other factors that we talked about earlier and how those stress the system.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously I'm not in a team environment, so I'm not able to get the exact, you know, number of contacts, ground contacts and things of that nature. But what I can do at the beginning of the session, and what I encourage all my athletes to do, is have a discussion with me. When I say, hey, how are you doing? I don't want the trivial just, oh, I'm good. How are you? Tell me how you're doing. Like, I'm a little bit sore. My ankle's still bothering me. I didn't sleep as well last night. I had an intense practice. I had workouts right before this. Okay, cool. Stop right there. What did you do in the workouts today? Was it pretty intense? Nah, we just did some spot shooting. Okay, what you got going on tomorrow? Tomorrow's the day off. Cool. So we can get after it a little bit. Or if you already got all your jumps and stuff in already, then maybe we'll focus on some different isometrics. Again, being in season right now, I have a pretty, call it like a notoriously known group around here called the Breakfast Club, where, you know, my basketball players, they're working out 6 a.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And those sessions look different for each kid within the session. Some kids are playing a lot. Some kids are not playing that much. Some kids need to be able to play a lot. So for the ones that need to be able to play a lot but aren't handling as well, we got some low impact modalities that we can do for conditioning. So they're on the VersaClimber, just, you know, getting some minimal effective dose, you know, whether it's some sprint intervals, just 3 minutes here and cover as much distance, but it's not something where like, hey, I need to put you on the line and we're going to get you on the clock down and back, weight this. And it's a buildup, you know, same with, like I said, some kids who maybe aren't playing as much, then it's like, all right, during our power segment, you guys can actually do some of your jumping. Some of the other ones, instead of the jumping portion, you know, just still do something with the medicine ball, some upper body plyos to get that, you know, central nervous system going. But maybe you're doing some auxiliary work for a specific need that you have for your hip, ankle, knee, shoulders, whatever it is that you need as an individual. And like you said, just, you know, adapting that session to the needs of the athlete. And I think that's where like workout environment, I think that's where consistency comes into it as well. I know I have a good amount of people that ask if they see, you know, the Breakfast Club workouts. They know some of the kids that are in there and they see the successes that they have. And they're like, hey, I want to join the Breakfast Club. And I'm like, this isn't something that like you can just hop into. Like, you got to get used to working out, I'll say, quote unquote, the right way, but, you know, to the standard, I'll say, instead of, you know, saying the right way, the standard of what we become accustomed to. And that's usually, you know, in the afternoon and the weekends when you're fresh. Because now when you add that morning, well, you better make sure you're going to sleep well at night, because I'm not going to have you falling asleep at 1 o'clock and you got to wake up at 5 a.m. to be here, because now you're taken away from everything else on the day. So the kids have gotten used to that. They've gotten used to, you know, what their needs are in their prehab. They can go about that. And they've gotten used to, you know, having the discussions with me. And like I said, when you have that consistency as well, too, you know what your body can really say. You know if this is a little bit of just soreness from the day, or if it's something that might be developing and becoming like kind of a chronic issue that we really got to work around or work on to kind of get there.
I think your Breakfast Club concept sounds very unique, and I kind of like that from a like regular accountability standpoint and that sort of thing. I like that a lot. We've talked about how much you know now and how much that you've valued treating people like people, and just the whole evolution of coaching and your transition from being a athlete to being a coach and working with the next generation of athletes now. Is there anything that, you know now as a coach and a professional that you wish you could have like offered to your past self when you were an active high school and college athlete, or anything that you wished like coaches would have done differently or anything like that for you?
Yeah, man, that's a pretty deep question. I would say it's kind of like the driving force for, you know, who I've become, who I am, and how I show up, I would say, for like all of my athletes. One, I got to preface it by saying that, you know, I had a lot of great examples, coaches, mentors, family members who showed up for me in a lot of great ways. Friends showed up for me in a lot of great ways. But I also have a good amount of coaches who didn't. And I think I learned from that, you know, from both ends. One, knowing how good it felt to be supported. I think that's one thing a lot of people can see, you know, from me. If you know me in person, if you look at my social medias, you know, how I intentionally show up for my athletes. And honestly, anybody I care about, you know, I do my best. I feel like I'm committed to showing up how they need me to show up. And then being the role, you know, the role that I have in these athletes' world as a coach, as a mentor, you know, as a friend to a lot of these kids and my adult athletes, whoever I'm working with, you know, like I'm a companion. I value our relationships. So with that comes a responsibility to, you know when I can just be a listening ear, know when I can lend advice, know when I need to kind of outsource it elsewhere, you know, whether that's sports performance related, basketball related, or just anything sports specific related. And I think that's just like kind of important to me and to the athletes that we're working with. And, you know, just going back to, you know, who I was as an athlete coming up, you know, the people I had in my life, or, you know, have in my life, I think it'd be important for them to do the same thing. So again, great parents, great coaches and everything like that, but like how they showed up, you know, they could be informative on some situations. If they needed to kind of pass it off or just say like, hey, I don't know. You know, like I said, I try to show up in that kind of way for my athletes, because there were definitely different areas and points in my life I can see where like, all right, I can go to some people for X, Y, and Z and it helped push me to another level. And then there were other times where it was like, some people stepped in and it was like, man, you probably didn't need to be the one for this. And like, maybe you need to help educate yourself to help get me better. And then there were also, unfortunately, some of those people who showed up in the wrong kind of ways or with the wrong kind of intentions that, you know, might have hindered, you know, some of my development and growth. But at the end of the day, I've learned and developed and, you know, now apply everything, you know, from back then to now. And I think it's been to my benefit, you know, for my growth as a person and for, you know, everybody that I work with.
Yeah, amazing, Wes. I mean, first off, just, you know, re-echoing your point on collaboration and knowing when you as a coach, as a mentor, are in the right situation to provide for the person in front of you, and when you're not, and when you have to tap out and send to outside help. You know, I think the days of being an outlaw in the world of coaching and mentoring athletes are really over. You really need a good team to work with in collaboration. There's not one person who can do it all for an athlete, and there's not one person who can provide everything an athlete needs. So I certainly love the point of recognizing and almost like humbling yourself and saying like, look, I don't know everything about, you know, this injury, this person, their training, whatever, their sport, whatever we're referring to. I don't know everything, but if I feel like I'm in over my head, I'm going to tap out and send to someone who does. I think that's huge. And that's something I don't often see, unfortunately, in coaches, is I think we all kind of think in the back of our mind, like we know what's best for someone. And then we become our own worst enemy when we kind of stop learning or stop listening to the athlete and recognizing that we've hit our own limits. So I certainly love that point that you brought up, and you touched on something else as well. As you were talking there, it made me realize that sometimes we have good intentions, but we don't always implement them in the best way possible for the athlete in front of us. Or sometimes we have good intentions and it's just the wrong time to, you know, go down that road or have that conversation. So at least for myself, I've started to kind of ask the athletes that I work with what they want. And I say, look, you know, do you want me to sit here and listen to you kind of, you know, go on a 2-minute rant about the injury? Because I get it's frustrating. I get it's annoying. And we have to validate all those feelings that athletes have. And if I've just got to sit here for 60 seconds and listen to it, that's what I'm going to do. But by the same token, I could explain the injury to them and kind of give them a little bit of logic behind it and some closure on, you know, why things might have happened and that sort of thing. But if I give the wrong answer on that, of those two possible, you know, solutions there to the wrong person at the wrong time, I'm kind of doing them a disservice. So I've really liked starting to ask people, you know, what they want and when they want things, and kind of individualize how I work with them based on that, instead of just going about things the same way I always do.
Yeah, absolutely. I know one thing that stood out right there, what you mentioned, is talking about like intentionality. You know, I'm big on intention, but I'm even like bigger on execution, you know, just to kind of put it into like a basketball reference, you know, especially when I was coaching, or even if I go to any of my athletes' games and we get feedback on the game. And let's say like, you know, you make a turnover, you know, you're trying to throw the ball, you throw a risky pass and the defender ends up making a deflection and steals the ball. Of course, your coach is going to get upset with you, but I would hate when an athlete explains, like, I was trying to get it to him because he was cutting. Well, it's like, all right, you tried to, but like what happened? At the end of the day, it's a turnover. I can see what you were trying to do. You sure you had great intentions, but how's that execution look? So when it comes to like the roles that we have, you know, you can have all the best intentions of, you know, hey, I'm working with this athlete. I got this athlete that's on the cusp of this. They can accomplish that. But kind of to the point of what you mentioned as well, too, if I'm not that guy, forward, I don't have a certain level of knowledge and experience to help get you there. I need to, like you said, humble yourself and kind of refer to who we can get the right situation for you, or humble yourself and learn so you can become that guy, you know, or girl, or, you know, for whoever's listening to this, because it's important, you know, like I said, to lead with that humility and decide where you fit in that role. Getting long-winded with this, but I just think about, you know, the roles that I'm in right now and the people I've been fortunate to work with. There are some people who are a lot of these kids, honestly, that have accomplished, or they're on their way to accomplish way more than I was ever able to accomplish from a sport playing standpoint. You know, we've had, you know, some of my first experiences here, you know, we're working with guys in their pre-draft. I was never fortunate enough to make it to that level where NBA teams were considering picking me, let alone in the lottery. But I know I had to show up, I had to listen, and I did have areas where I could offer advice. I paid attention, and I think most importantly, I showed up, and I got great relationships with some guys who are at the highest level of basketball. So it's like, even though I never was able to reach there from a playing standpoint, I'm reaching there from where I'm at right now, and I can go on about it. You know, I got a couple kids who, you know, played the All-Americans in their sport, going high major Division One, getting all sorts of recognition and stuff. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be a part of that because I think of how I kind of contribute to, you know, to their successes, I would say. And I think, you know, maybe put out some fires that didn't blaze too much, or I helped, you know, push them in the right direction when they were at some crucial moments that could have either had them being mediocre versus, you know, kind of living in their potential in the space that they're, you know, capable of being at.
Yeah, no, I love that. I mean, it goes back to, we were just talking about this a few minutes ago, how sometimes we live vicariously through the success of our athletes, for lack of a better way to put it. And you mentioned you never made it to the pre-draft level. I never even made it to the competitive college level in sport. I wasn't that good. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I might not have ever had that opportunity myself, but if I can work with an athlete and help enable that opportunity for them, that at the end of the day, my box is checked. Like, I'm fulfilled. I'm happy. And I don't need to play. I don't need to be the protagonist or the main character in this story. Like, I don't need to do the full load myself. As long as the athlete is back to what they want to do or doing what they want to do at the level they're desiring, then I'm happy at the end of the day. Maybe I played, you know, a 10th of a percent of the role in that, but guess what? That's still a part of it. And I'm happy about that. Maybe I, you know, ended up playing a huge role for the athlete and getting them back from injury or working it, you know, with them from a sports performance standpoint, like you guys do. And if that's the case, then great. But, you know, we don't always need to be like the main character or the protagonist in every story. I think we need to look at every opportunity to work with an athlete as a blessing, and we need to make the most out of whatever opportunity we have to help better and serve the athlete in front of us. One more thing I really want to hit on, Wes, and you've mentioned this before, you're a baller. You are still very active. You're very athletic, and you know, you can do things that most people, once they stop playing sports, can't really continue to do. But that success that you've experienced physically and from a performance standpoint, and even in your career, that comes at a cost. You have to give things up in order to get to where you're currently at. Has there been anything that your personal success has cost you? Like, what sacrifices have you had to make to get to where you are today? And, you know, do you see the athletes that you work with making similar sacrifices in their lives right now?
I would say, like, the biggest sacrifice I probably made, but, you know, to this point right now, is probably my biggest blessing, is the career that I have. And the sacrifice came is, you know, the one box I didn't check from an organizational basketball standpoint is I never played professionally. So maybe that's why, you know, my body's not too battered. Maybe it's why I still have a heightened enthusiasm about playing and, you know, working out with intentions. Because, you know, some of my main motivations for when I'm working out is like, you know, I want to still be able to do things that I couldn't do back in college. You know, I'm well into my 30s now, and I'm look forward to being able to do dunks that I was never able to do when I was supposed to be in my prime and peak level of athleticism, you know, whether that's in college or right out of college. So that right there, you know, coming to the realization that, like, hey, I'm really not going to be playing from an organizational standpoint, but that never changed my passion and how I feel about the game and how I feel about the development for myself. So it's all been super organic. You know, I'm not waiting for a coach or a scout or anybody to tell me and define who I am. Like, I define myself. Like, I'm forever going to be a hooper as long as I'm willing and able, you know, it's all on my terms. So then we talk about, like, from the day-to-day kind of sacrifices. I mean, anything worth having is worth the sacrifice. You know, discipline is doing what you need to do, you know, based off what you want most, not what you want in the moment. So, I mean, there's definitely times where, you know, weekdays, especially in the summertime, man, you know, it's the early mornings, very early mornings, even during the wintertime right now, very early mornings. So that kind of shuts things down. I guess, you know, maybe my nightlife, maybe some of my social life during the weekdays and stuff. You know, shoot, I'm even thinking just maybe from like the average person, some of the things that might be consumed on TV or the casual level, you know, I'm not consuming that stuff. You know, I'm getting my heads in the book. You know, I don't really watch maybe as much sports as the general population, like some things in the NBA or some things at certain levels of college basketball that I normally tuned into, I don't really know what's going on because I'm more tapped into what some of the high school teams are doing around here that my athletes play for. I can tell you more about the college teams that my athletes play for than, you know, whoever's in the top 10 on the girls or men's side of basketball. So there's definitely, I would say, a sacrifice, quote unquote. It could be a perceived sacrifice, but I live a very fulfilling life. You know, I think in my opinion, I live a very balanced life for what it needs to look like. And sometimes it kind of teeters one way or the other, but I know what the balance needs to look like for me. Because then also other times, you know, as much as I want to grind, as much as, you know, you see the grind and stuff, I recognize when hey, I got to sacrifice some of this grind mode and like really settle down and sit down and take some casual time for me. Like I'm going on vacation this weekend. And this is after, you know, we talked off air the previous two weekends of like really grinding and, you know, making the most of some opportunities where I need to be present for. But I looked ahead on my calendar and I was like, you know, things start to ramp up and get busy. But before they get like super busy, instead of just, you know, taking advantage of whatever financial benefits I can make from working these sessions, like, yo, go get away for a little bit. Like, put your phone down, set some of these boundaries, tell the parents, tell the athletes, get ahead of it. Let them know there's going to be 4 days where, like, I'm not accessible. Okay, when I get back, you know, we can talk a little bit or we can get things going back again. But it's just those kind of sacrifices. And even as I speak it, it's almost not even like fully sacrifices, but it's more so just like the boundaries that you got to put on yourself, that I put on myself, of like, whether it's a bedtime, a boundary of what I eat, so that way I can make sure I show up and work out well, a boundary of the type of relationships and friendships that I have and pour into, because I know it's going to be fulfilling to me. So the sacrifices and boundaries are definitely abundant in my life, but I think they're all worthwhile. And then going to the point of the kids, when you talk about the sacrifices that they make, I would say, honestly, man, the demographic that I work with, they make way more sacrifices, I think, for, you know, what they're trying to accomplish. Again, I wasn't working out on my own accord at 6 a.m. twice a week and still doing some of the basketball workouts and stuff. We used to do it when I was at high school in Gonzaga. I want to say twice a week, sometimes here and there, but it was like mandatory. You know, coach gave you an assignment that like, hey, you got to be here at 6 a.m. on this day and this day because you got on-court work or what have you. But these kids, they're very driven, especially when I think they had that trust level of like, hey, I want to accomplish this, so I need to do this. And it takes that kind of sacrifice. So, man, it's like big kudos to them because they have all the access to all sorts of different things in this world that we live in now. And with that comes a lot of choices. You know, they can choose their distractions. They can choose what they want to lean into for their benefit. They can even choose who they're going to work with. You know, they got their school workouts. They got all sorts of other gyms, but they make that choice and decision that, hey, I got to show up at this time to get my work in, to get where I got to go. And when I'm out of here, I got to make sure I implement what I need to implement to separate myself from my peers that may want to accomplish some of the same things.
Just to kind of recap here, first off, on your own sacrifices that way, I think it's important, as you recognized, maybe it's not so much the term sacrifice, but more the term trade-off, right? You kind of set the boundaries to determine the road that takes you to where you want to be in life. And you can turn left or turn right anywhere along the way, I should say. But knowing that if you do that, it's going to have a cost. Maybe you still get to where you want to be, but maybe it takes longer, or maybe you don't end up where you want to be. But putting up some of those different boundaries for yourself on, you mentioned like TV and entertainment and that sort of thing, and taking it a step further even to like food and that sort of thing. I think those are a lot of the same things that I found I have to kind of like put up for myself too, right? Like, it's very easy to flip on the TV and just kind of get going down a little like binge-worthy series or whatever that way. Like, it kills me that the streaming services even have like categories now called binge-worthy TV, where it's just like, it's TV shows that people never just watch one of, right? And it's like, you know, if you do that and you're, you know, losing 2 hours, 3 hours a day just doing that. I think I read a stat in a book by Mike Matthews, The Little Black Book of Workout Motivation, it's called, that the average American watches 5 hours of TV a day. And I just can't stop but think, like, you know, if we did that every single day times 5 or 6 days a week, like if we stopped doing that and replaced that time with things like the fitness, things like the reading, different things that you mentioned you've been doing lately, you know, it's amazing to see how much time we actually have on our hands when we remove those distractors. And as you mentioned about the athletes you work with, you know, today, I completely agree and echo your point that the distractors have never been more prevalent for them, right? I think social media plays into that to a large extent. I love social media and think it does a lot of beneficial things. But I also have been guilty of spending 30, 40 minutes scrolling through TikTok mindlessly before. And
do you ever
I know
get the screen? Do you ever get the screen time notification on Sundays? And
yeah,
pops up. I'm just like, please be down. Please be down 6%. Please be down 12%. Then you get it, it's like you were up 18%.
And it kills me, man. It's just like, ugh, it just right to the heart. Yeah. And it's like, man, how much time did I waste on some kind of like something that literally provided nothing for me, provided nothing for the people I work with. And it was really just like a temporary little like boredom cure. And it's like, yeah, was I really bored or did I just not feel like doing work at that point? So I certainly echo your point on the distractors are certainly the loudest they've ever been for kids. And it really requires a lot of discipline and sacrifice. But with that, as you mentioned yourself, is it's not just the discipline to put the head down and just keep hammering away on the project. It's also the discipline to know yourself and know that, hey, sometimes we need to step back and take a break, right? Like, you know, if we engage in hard physical training 7 days a week, eventually we're going to get to a point where our body kind of says like, no, you're done. You need a day off. But the same thing can be true mentally from a nervous system, you know, CNS fatigue standpoint and so on that way. So I think having the discipline to stay committed, but also having the discipline to know when you need to step away for a minute is absolutely huge. And, you know, not just stepping away, but what you use that time that you step away for, right? Like if you step away and then you go right into all those habits that you're trying to avoid, it's a lot more difficult to come out from them as opposed to, hey, we're going to step back for a minute or two or, you know, a day or two. We're going to disconnect from the phone. We're going to just kind of reset, hit the reset button for lack of a better way to put it, and then come back better and stronger and more rested. Then I think that's a much healthier way to do it.
Yeah, I think what I strive for as well too is like during those down times or kind of like the yin to the yang or the yang to the yin, whatever side you're looking at, is to seek out things that are like more fulfilling to you. Because I know, I mean, social media serves its purpose. I mean, we got connected via social media. So like there are some benefits to it, but it's like having that mindfulness that, all right, you know, I'm looking at the clock and it's, let's say 1:13 p.m. Like once it hits 1:20 p.m., like cut it off right there. And even I've gotten into doing things like that, but then also I'll get to like, all right, 1:20 is the cap, but like, let's see if we can beat that. So like if I get to a post or maybe it's a good read or something funny and I'm like, all right, that was a good one to end on. It's only 1:18. Now I feel better about kind of capping things. And even just like the fulfillment of things that just aren't quote unquote productive. I know sometimes, you know, I play my video games, you know, I'm on the PlayStation from time to time, but like I don't really touch it during the week. So I think this past weekend was the first time that I played my PlayStation, I think in 2 or 3 weeks. And I just remember, you know, we had some events going on the previous weekend. I think it might've been some longer work days and some basketball stuff going on. And I just remember coming up to this like most recent weekend. I was just like, all right, man, I'm gonna get some time to play my PlayStation finally. And it's like, all right, I got to work my sessions, had a basketball game to go to. And it was like, you know, some people's vices might be going out and partying at night and, you know, I can do some of that, but to me, like, I'm just not fulfilling the whole party in life. I could feel like I just want to sit and scroll on my phone. So instead of me just going to sit on the couch and having the game on and scrolling the whole time, I was really, like, set on, like, all right, I'm going to go play my games. I'm going to do these missions. And it's a little more stimulating. And I think just overall enjoyment that comes with that instead of like the mindlessness or the mindless scrolling and hoping that you like stumble upon something like interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting that you bring up the PlayStation West, because I think a lot of people, and maybe I fall guilty of this myself, a lot of people are very quick to critique the video game side of things. And, you know, I think that there's more good that can come out of it that the people that critique it aren't aware of, right? Like, if I'm just mindlessly scrolling through TikTok, social media, then I'm probably doing that alone by myself, just, you know, scrolling. If I'm on a game or something like that, like there's a very high likelihood it could be a social thing that I'm doing with friends or people I know that way. And even, you know, even though there's a time and a place to have that alone time and step back, I like the concept of the social element that the games can provide as opposed to just mindlessly scrolling.
Exactly. So. Yeah, like I said, it just looks fulfilling, or, you know, you get the fulfillment for what it looks like for that person.
Yeah. And I think that's another amazing point too, is fulfillment looks a little different for everyone you work with. And again, going back to what we talked about before, is finding ways to individualize for the person in front of us, recognize what they need to do to feel fulfilled and how we can best provide that for them. And maybe that comes on the mentorship side, like you mentioned. Maybe sometimes that comes on the coaching, strength coach, PT side of things as well, right? Like, you know, if I'm working with an athlete who just wants to end their session feeling absolutely smoked, but they're mid-season and I don't really want to do too much, then maybe I make them do 30 seconds of med ball slams, as many as possible, right? 30 seconds of all that work probably will not fatigue them to the point of taking from their performance. But 30 seconds of all out med ball slams will certainly make them feel like they did something, you know, redlining for a short period of time. So we can get creative and find ways to provide for the person in front of us on what they value from a mentorship standpoint or a coaching or PT standpoint as well.
Yeah, that's actually something I get into at the end of a lot of my workouts, especially in season, or when there's just a lot of demand, I would say, outside the facility. So whether they have tryouts or, you know, whatever workouts, games, et cetera, going on, but we're here for our workout, you kind of want to have that like lasting impression after the session if they still have some energy towards it, but you know that they need some things left in the tank for later. So I know one of the things two of the things that are my go-tos are like just some max effort RPM burst on the assault bike. So that way, you know, they have something to chase, but it's really going to be about 7, maybe 12 seconds worth of a bout of energy. And they can kind of see that score. So, you know, if they came in previously and they were at like a 83 when they first started and they know they're kind of tired, they know they're feeling good or wherever they're at, but they know they have some stuff later, they can really push. And then they see that like 86, they're like kind of winded, but they're like, oh, okay, I got a little victory. I got something I can look forward to going in later. Or like the VersaClimb, we do like a VersaClimber sprint. You know, most people have the biggest love-hate relationship with the VersaClimber because they know it's so good for them, but they know how they're going to feel afterwards, especially when we do some distances. But depending on the day, depending on what else they got going on, we'll do like a 50 feet burst or 100 feet burst. And, you know, you just try to get the time that, you know, is best for them. Or they'll ask me, oh, Coach West, what have you gotten on there? And I'll tell them my number and they try to shoot for that. And, you know, they got no choice but to go, you know, kind of ball out on it. And it's usually just, you know, sometimes 12 to 25 seconds. So, like you said, kind of within that same time span of what you're doing, like your medicine ball, kind of max effort burst with, and getting that same kind of effect, but also kind of having like some tangible like numbers to reference and kind of chase for. So they can kind of have that intentionality with what they're doing before walking out without taking too much for whatever else they have going on at that time.
For sure. And as we talked about earlier, competition can really bring out the best in people. So fostering that environment from a training standpoint, making the little whiteboard leaderboard for the week and all that way, it's certainly a fun little element to add to things, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And that's also what it is too. Because, you know, when the kids show up at a tournament, if they show up at a late playoff game, semifinals, finals, like you got to show up. So that's kind of like the mentality. It's like fosters that mentality. It's like, all right, you had this workout, you know, it's 10 seconds left on the clock. Like, how much can you really put out there? You know what I mean? Like, into this rep right here. And again, they see that they got like that 96, that 97. And a lot of times they'll either, you know, like I said, feel accomplished, or if they end up right around that number, they're feeling like determined, like that they need to get the next one. Or they realize that, okay, actually, you know, if 97 was my best and I got a 95, but I feel like pretty gassed, like I'm right there on the cusp of it. It's definitely a lot of like, I think that like mental that you can really tap in with those kind of like thought processes when it comes to, you know, like the end of a workout or whatever time of season you're in.
Yeah, and on that note too, like say someone's consistently in the 90s and then one day they're all the way down in the 50s or 60s. That's when you kind of step back, recognize like, hey, something's off here. And you go, hey, you know, you good? Do you need anything from me? That's when you kind of go back through all those things that we talked about earlier. It's a great litmus test to see when things are a little bit off from normal, for lack of a better way to put it, as well as a performance enhancing thing.
And that actually goes into very well, like, you know, when we had these conversations with these athletes, because they're like, you know, I didn't sleep that well last night and I got the workout with you and I was going to go running after this and then practice later tonight. When they see those numbers, like, you know, if you were getting in the 70s on that RPM, but today you're at a 56, it's kind of like, yeah, this really proves that, hey, maybe instead of going to go do that run afterwards, like, go take a nap. Did you eat breakfast today? What did you eat before this? Go get a good meal. Right? Your body needs it because you know what you're capable of, but you see where you're at right now. You don't want to show up when it matters most. And, you know, the little 10-second bout on the bike is not going to take away too much from everything else, but it can really show you where you're at in that moment.
Completely agree, Wes. I feel like you and I could probably talk about this stuff all day long at this rate. I feel like we've covered a lot of amazing points and a lot of ground. Do you have any kind of closing thoughts or closing remarks or anything we might have missed in this?
Man, I think we hit a lot. I would say, man, my just probably closing remarks would be kind of around like where we started at some point in the beginning of the conversations. I think, you know, being grounded and just having a great foundation of just doing the right thing, doing right by others, and doing right by yourself, I think is what most people should leave with, regardless of your profession, regardless of your relationships, regardless of your dynamic with anybody else. Lead with goodness, and I would say grace. And, you know, be willing to make connections. So I think as practitioners, as people, we have more in common one way or another than we have differences. And I think when we lean into those connections, you know, it makes it better for everybody involved.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I love that point. And I love the continued focus on the people that you bring to everything that you do, Wes. For people who want to find out more about you, check you out online and keep up to date with all the amazing things that you do day in and day out, where can they find you at?
Oh man, I'm everywhere. Unifies a lot of my social media stuff now. So Instagram and my TikTok at @BigWes_D. I got my YouTube, youtube.com/WesDunning. I got to get a little more active on there. I'm working on the long form content, getting more like shorts and stuff on there. I would say I'm most active on the Instagram, pretty active on the TikTok. TikTok, I would say you're going to see a lot more personality-driven stuff as well as the sports performance stuff. I just like to have fun on that one. But at the end of the day, I think they're all providing value. Then as far as like, you know, websites, you go on healthyballer.com/hoopers. You'll find a lot of the Healthy Baller stuff on there, but you'll find a lot of stuff that we do with basketball players. And a lot of stuff that, you know, Blair and I have going on that website. And then if you need to email me, wes@healthyballer.com. That's probably the best way to reach me right now via email too. So awesome. I'm all over, not hard to find. They can reach out to you if they need to reach me directly.
For sure. We'll link to all that in the description below as well. That way, if you didn't quite catch it, you can just click there. Wes, really appreciate your time, man. Thanks again for everything.
Thanks for having me, Dan. It's an honor.